morning, everybody. Yeah, I was very moved by Margaret's meditation. Thank you. And I was reminded of Thich Nhat Hanh. He would sometimes lead these meditation walks, and he would hold the hand of a child. And sometimes that would be his advice. You want to learn to meditate? Hold the hand of a child. And usually we think, oh yeah, I agree with that. I'm not going to do it, but... So maybe you could use your imagination this morning, and maybe what I have to say here and the terrain we're going to wander in, maybe it's good to hold the hand of a child just in your imagination. And why are we talking about any of this stuff anyway, you know? And what is the nature of how our lives unfold and spill forth into the future, into the hands of our children and future generations that we will not know. That's a bizarre thought. Like, not only do we not know what's going to happen, like you have no idea what I'm about to say, but we don't really know exactly what the future will look like. In fact, we know very little, and we know we will hand our children a world that they will inhabit and learn to move in, and there will be tremendous challenges and opportunities. There'll be many gifts, I hope, will be leaving seeds that are still fertile. That's my hope. I was also moved by that song, because actually going back to the roots is really kind of the nature of my own work in the world. That's one way of even expressing it, which is radical. That's what the word means anyway. Radical means rooted. I know people usually mean it in the opposite way. Let's be radical, unrooted. Well, that's not what it means. But and rooted in what? In the deep source, you know, in the hidden sources, in the hidden streams, back 15,000 years, you know. What was born in our ancestors that still can feed us now and feed us into the future. Not everything, of course. I'm sure if our ancestors were anything like us, they also had many illusions and made wrong steps. And yeah, of course. But I, for one, still am compelled by it's a Greek idea of the underground river of truth, also called memory, which flows secretly from the hidden chambers and occasionally surfaces, and the water is tasty. So actually, I want to do a bit of that today. I want to wander around in two traditions, what I'm going to call Tikkun Olam, which I'll explain what that means in a moment, and the Tao. I'm wandering in the Eastern and Western worlds. And I'm not doing it as like some scholar. I'm not a scholar of the Tao. I happen to know a lot more about Judaism and early Christianity and less about the East. So I'm not pretending to be an expert, but I'm wondering something. Because the world is mixed up. I don't know if you've noticed this or not. And what is the Western world? I hear a lot of phrases like, well, the West is like this, and the East is like this. And if you've done any traveling, the whole world is mixed up. You know, I've seen Bedouin kids with cell phones in Manchester United shirts. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Herding sheep. Okay? So I guess if they get lost, they can use the cell phone. Or maybe they have a GPS tracker. I don't know. So the modern world is less divided, and that, of course, creates challenges and opportunities as well. So I want to roam around in a little bit of the gifts of the East and the West, just from one kind of really narrow perspective here. And I'm going to make some generalizations. And I'm going to say, how are these things in tension? And how might we hold a bit of that tension? How might we taste from the old stream a bit for what it has to give us, and or go back 15,000 years and just be influenced, be allowed to be influenced in such a way. And you're going to see that Tikkun Olam and the Tao are saying quite different things. I remember when, of course, I went to graduate school in comparative religion, and the very first day that one of my professors. We sat down in this little like seminar format, like just on tables, and he was also the head of the program, and he said, I know some of you are from, not everyone, from the States, and some of you are from Europe, and some of you are from here. This is when I lived in Israel. And he said, there's a disease in academia, and the disease is comparative religion. That was what we were all taking. And the disease, the symptom is something like, all religions are saying the same thing. He's like, you're here to find out that they're not saying the same thing. We were like, okay. And that's how we started the program. And I, you know, maybe just had an axe to grind. But that's interesting, because on the one hand, we have all seen, if you've done any kind of reading, that there are overlaps between traditions, correct? And that can be celebrated. And there are also massive differences, and you're going to see one today, kind of the East and the West. And I'm not here to say which is the right one, but I just want to sort of highlight the tension. So I'll do the readings for today. So this is from the Tao Te Ching here. And this is speaking of the Tao. Approach it, and there is no beginning. Follow it, and there is no end. You can't know it, but you can be it. At ease in your own life. Just realize where you come from. This is the essence of wisdom. Here's another one. The master gives himself up to whatever the moment brings. He knows that he is going to die. And he has nothing left to hold on to. No illusions in his mind. No resistances in his body. He doesn't think about his actions. They flow from the core of his being. He holds nothing back from life. Therefore, he is ready for death, as a man is ready for sleep after a good day's work. Free from desire, you will realize mystery. Caught in desire, you will see only the manifestations. And of course, my favorite, stop thinking and end your problems. That could also be an advertisement for our many marijuana dispensaries in town. All right. Now let's hear from the rabbinic tradition. Now, tikkun olam, I'll explain more in a moment, means just to repair the world. That's the phrase here. And it comes from the Talmud. And these passages are from the Mishnah, which is buried inside the Talmud. We must provide help for the non-Jewish poor as well as the Jewish poor. We must visit non-Jews when they are sick as well as our fellow Jews when they are sick. And we must attend to the burial of their dead as well as the burial of our own dead, for these are the ways of peace. And these next two are in a very famous section of the Mishnah called the Fathers. Avot means father. Be amongst the students of Aaron. Love peace and pursue peace. Love people and bring them close to the Torah. And one of the more well-known passages, say little and do much. And this is from Leviticus. I could have picked really dozens of what we might call social justice-oriented passages from Leviticus and from other parts of the Torah. But that's what's feeding the Mishnah. The Mishnah's commentary on the Torah. So, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap all the way to the corners of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not pick your vineyards bare or gather the fallen fruits of your vineyard, and you shall leave them for the poor and the stranger, for I am Adonai, your God. So, maybe the first thing I want to explore here is a very general question, like, how do we live a good life? You know, like, what is the good life? That's actually a whole series we did here one time. What is the good life? Of course, that's the Greek question. How do we pursue what is good and true and beautiful? Or I might even add now something like meaningful. What is a meaningful life? And or what is a good enough life? I could also handle that. And if we begin to contemplate such things, how do we take aim? Because if you don't aim at anything, you're probably not likely to go in any particular direction. So what's the nature of our aim? And the backdrop to some of what I'd like to say today has to do with our value for the month, which is environmental sustainability. I thought that was last month, but whatever. So, but anyway, environmental sustainability, which is like that phrase now at one time was quite provocative. It's not so provocative anymore. You know who else cares about environmental sustainability? Target. It's in their statements. Walmart. Pampers. Yes, I'm not making this up. They all care about environmental sustainability. You could say that's just good PR, good business, you know, in a sense. But it's not so, you know, it's not such a quote radical claim to say that you're into environmental sustainability. So is Shell and other massive corporations. We're just holding that in the background. How to be in the world, you know? How to pursue a good life in the world? What makes the world good for us and for others? And I think everybody knows that our level of greed and consumption of goods and services and really maybe even ideas is not very sustainable. I don't think anyone, right or left, would say, this is going to go on forever. We all have that sort of low level, this doesn't seem workable in the long run, and yet there's not a lot of action, you know, when it comes to change. And you could say, well, what's that phrase? Something is, obviously you don't know what I can't think of. change is the child of necessity. That's not quite it. What is it? Invention is the mother of necessity, or necessity is the mother of invention. Clichés are stupid, but it's a short way of saying we're going to change when we have to, you know. And how dark will that place be? Probably our children are going to find out. And so it's hard to change. And it's hard to find the right kind of aim. We prefer actually just signaling that we like change. That's what we call, much of what passes as social justice these days is signaling that we care about things. Notice my post about something. Notice me noticing something. Meanwhile, you know, not much change happens. Okay, so let's talk about tikkun olam. Tikkun olam means to repair the world. Olam means world, and tikkun means something like repair or fix isn't quite it, but something like that. Repair the world. Now, all of a sudden start holding two opposing philosophies, almost spiritual stances in the world. One is to repair the world. Now, you have to first admit that something is wrong, correct? Otherwise, there would be no need for any repairing. And this is one of the gifts of the West, I might say, coming up out of Judaism and the Judeo-Christian stream and others. The Greeks feed a similar kind of notion. So, yeah, repair the world. And much of that came out of the Torah with its orientation toward the marginalized. I know a lot of people like to critique the Bible. The Bible also says some extremely radical things about how to treat your enemies and your neighbors. I'm not even talking about Jesus. I'm talking about the Old Testament. Like, don't be greedy. In fact, leave your fields so that the poor people can come and get things. Why? Because things are need fixing. They need repairing. Do you feel the orientation? All right, it's toward repair. It's toward action. It's about action and not so much about beliefs. It's really the origins of what we would call a story of redemption, or even you could even say something like salvation. Remember, if you believe in redemption, you have to also say there's a problem that needs addressing, correct? And this very much influences the Western world and its approach. Even the very notion of progress is based on something's not quite right now and it could be better in the future. Now, where did they get that idea? What are its sources? What are its gifts and its weaknesses, you might want to begin to ask. It's rooted, in other words, in a certain kind of posture toward creation or even toward the earth. By the way, people misread Genesis quite, they just misread it, I guess. And they think, oh, because it says, fill the earth and subdue it, that this is a domineering passage. And it's actually a lot more nuanced than that. It also, in the same story, God, Yahweh, or it's really Elohim here, says to all beings, be fruitful and multiply. That's one separate passage. And he says to the humans, be fruitful and multiply. And then he gives essentially the human characters, this original humanity, a job to do, which is to work and care for things and name things. It's a much more creative passage than we often give it credit for. And it's still an image of humanity working the land and shaping and changing things and working with. Do you feel the orientation here? Toward change and action. And of course, there's a time for that. Out of this whole milieu, I suppose, comes the notion of a Messiah. That, you know, a figure, whether you believe in a Messiah or not, or just take it conceptually, that a figure will show up and right the wrongs. And now, if you're in a situation where you're experiencing a lot of harm and a lot of wrong and a lot of suffering, don't you want somebody to show up and say, let's take a look at this? Yeah, that's also in the same stream here of tikkun olam, repair, change, make some effort. You probably heard that famous parable where there's a village and the village is whatever, they're just going about village life, and one day a dead body shows up in the river. You ever heard this parable? A dead body shows up in the river, and they say, what should we do with this? And they have a council, and they take the body out, and they don't know to whom it belongs. And they decide to have a funeral, and they have a funeral, and they bury the body, and they honor it, and the village feels like this is the best choice that we could make, and another month goes by, and another body shows up. And they say, oh, I guess we ought to do the same thing. And sure enough, more and more bodies keep showing up. And then they have like whole rituals for this. Oh, another one has showed up, and they even have assigned jobs, and so is the person that cleans the body, and so is, you know, and so forth and so on. And eventually somebody says, maybe we ought to go upstream and figure out why bodies keep floating down here. And that's tikkun olam. That's repair the world. It's not just whatever is present right in front of me, it's the activation of a certain way of being that says, let's go find out what the problem is and go after it. Do you feel how influential that way of being is when it comes to what we think of as the Western world? Yeah. So, okay. There's a weakness, I suppose we could say, with tikkun olam. And maybe it's something like this, that whatever we think our vision of the ultimate kingdom or the way things should be, we could be wrong in that, correct? If we say the world should be like this, and it's possible that we could be wrong, and our actions could cause as much, you know, suffering as we hope good. You know, say for example, the village, this is not in the original parable, if there is such a thing, you know. But let's just say the village says the only way to get upstream is that if we cut down all of our trees and use it for fuel to go upstream. And then when they come back down, they're going to be in trouble, you know. So just because you're saying I'm repairing the world doesn't mean you're not also leaving a wake of other things. That's a weakness in tikkun olam, you could say, in the orientation of that way of being. And in other words, progress at what cost? Salvation from what, you know? Do we really need to be saved or fixed? You know? I don't know. Okay, now let's talk about the Tao. So the Tao is more challenging to talk about than tikkun olam because the wise people from the East don't like to talk about it and like to say things like, you can't talk about it. So I'm going to try to talk about it. So maybe the first thing to say is, in its most simple form, the Tao is about coming into alignment with nature. Okay, so it's not so much about going after and fixing or addressing a problem. It's coming into alignment with the way things are, with nature. And it's not a thing, the Tao, or a name. It's like a way of being. Tao means path, so we've got path. But then you have to ask the next question, what path? Well, we can't tell you anything about it. Okay? It's because it's a way of being. It's not in words, and it's a certain way of aligning with the flow of things. So it is kind of like a flow, or the flow of the universe, or the flow of patterns that are the universe that we are also a part of. And you come into alignment with the Tao without action and without effort, without thought. Do you feel how starkly different that is than the Western approach to repair the world? So let's all get together and come into alignment without any action, without any effort, and without any thought into the flow of the way things are. And at that, we can't define what it is that we're up to. It's sort of like water. The Tao actually uses water. The Tao Te Ching uses water as an image for getting closer to what you can't get too close to. So it's kind of like water, which is constantly shape-shifting and replenishing itself. And it has nothing to do with our human plans and goals. The path is about the acceptance of the now, we would say. And the desire that it should be different is the cause of suffering. Do you feel what a contrast that is? The desire to want things to be different is suffering. So drop your desires, which you can do for about 5 seconds. Even sitting in silence, how many of you, when we rang the little chime, we sit in silence for about a minute, by the end of it, thought, this is a really long minute, okay? So, and we're not too adept at the emptiness, at getting close to the emptiness, which is getting close to our own emptiness, which is getting close to the emptiness of all things, which is getting close to the emptiness of time and the emptiness of being. Okay, so what else could we say? That we are nature. That's very different than we're going to work with nature, you know. We're going to use nature to do this, or it's just that we are. There's no difference. We are in the flow, and the only thing that blocks us from the felt experience of being nature are our own illusions of the mind. And let's see. And yeah, I suppose who would disagree that we're out of alignment with nature or the way things are? And it's true that nature is really no longer our primary teacher anymore, as it was for the first 2 million years of evolution. Nature is now this separate entity, also a very Western notion. The Western world's a little more dualistic, I suppose. So what's the point? How would you do the Tao? Well, you would stop trying. That's what you would do. You'd stop trying and let things be and become what you already are, and most importantly, stop thinking and end your problems. Now, which is it? Is it Tikkun Olam? Is it the Tao? Which is it? How many have some sense? I suppose this is like a show of hands. That there seems to be some truth in both of these perspectives. Anyone? Okay. I think we're at a kind of a new place in the 21st century. If we're going to make it to the 22nd century, I think we need a conversation between the gifts here and the weaknesses. But what's a weakness of the Tao? Can we ultimately transcend illusions and problems? Is it all illusion? Is it all in just a mind illusion? If we're in alignment with nature, if everything is non-dual in a sense, what about action? This is perhaps a weakness of the Tao. What about action? Although if you read the Tao carefully, they'll say you can't do anything about it and you should practice. So which is it? By the way, I mentioned this in the pre-talk thing. It's kind of an aside. I got this from my favorite podcast on the internet. It's called The Emerald. And if you ever listen to it, you'll think to yourself, I know why Kent thinks this is the greatest podcast on the internet, but you might also think, this is some weird stuff. But anyway, he's a real expert in it doesn't matter. I got what I'm about to say from him. So nirvana means no forest. Did you know that? Nirvana means no forest. So it's like transcending the forest in a way, and the forest is chaos and disorder in a way, and is that ultimately possible? Can you transcend the forest, or will the forest, like the Mayans, one day swallow you whole, you know? Can you? I don't know. It's a tension. Anyway, to be very simple, here's what I'm asking. Is it about repair, or is it about no repair and no thought and just surrendering? What if we are busy repairing what needs to be left alone? What if we're leaving alone something that needs some repairing work? And I just say, all right, welcome to, I think, the kind of consciousness that we need in the 21st century, which is not that it's ultimately about one or ultimately about the other. I don't really think that anymore. When I started to leave sort of evangelical Christianity, I thought, well, I'll become a Buddhist. That seems easy. You know, it's like, except when you read the Eightfold Path, you're like, well, there's a lot of things now, the Eightfold Path, you know. And then that started to feel like fundamentalism again. Like, and then if you talk to other Buddhists, like, well, a real Buddhist. And I was like, that's what we were saying in Christianity. Well, a real Christian, you know. So anyway, I thought maybe that was the kind of path. And I don't know if you know, so much of religion is also what I might even call spiritual DNA. And it's very hard to be a part of a completely different culture, for example, which is really the heart of religions is really cultural, and there's even an ethnic component. But anyway, what was my point? My point was that I thought, yeah, I'll just kind of go in this other direction, and I'll be freed from all this action-oriented stuff, and I'll just move toward the present. But it didn't really work for me, you know? It's like, is it important to see the mind as a separate, almost entity, and your desires as a separate entity, and to bear witness to that? Yes, I think so. But also, my dishwasher doesn't work correctly, and I need to fix it. And I'm not saying I'm exaggerating, because if you get into the Tao, there are plenty of things that require action, and if you get deep inside particularly the mystical strands of Judaism and Christianity, you also see there's an element of letting go of a lot of things, letting go of thoughts, and there's both streams. You go deep enough, they sort of touch one another. But what I'm saying is, in the 21st century, I think the kind of East versus West, I wonder in what ways they're singing harmony. And when it comes to things like big problems, like environmental sustainability, like how we live our lives, we do need something of both. We need to come into alignment with nature, with the way things are, with the flow, with the songs of the birds, with the rising and falling of the Grand River. I was walking by the Grand River the other day, because it also, believe it or not, doesn't just come here into Grand Haven. It also passes by my house there in Ada. And I don't know, I was just struck. It's almost a simple thought. But I thought, the only reason why I'm here is because of this river. The only reason why anybody lives here in this section of West Michigan is because of this river. People mock the Grand River, and they're like, that's that thing that's full of poop, you know? It's why any of us are here. You would not be on the shores of Grand Haven. You would not have a little lighthouse. You would not have like pretty photographs. It's all the river. The river gave birth to you. It really did. It gave birth to the indigenous people who were living there. I live at the confluence of the Thornapple and the Grand River, which was where all the tribes met in my particular area and where the first white people settled. In fact, the man who settled Ada, he married two indigenous women. They're buried right by my house. You can see their graves. They're just down the street. So, very interesting. Now, why was I going on about the Grand River? Oh, because we need to come into alignment with nature, with the way things are, with the flow. Nature is our teacher. And all of our plans and illusions need to be seen for what they are. Dust, vapor. Like the Mayans, the forest will swallow all of us. One burp from the sun and we're gone. Really? You say, well, not me. I've got a shelter with bottled water in the basement. You know, come on.
I'm laughing at my own joke.
Okay. And I think we have much to learn from our ancestors that teach us about tikkun olam, to repair the world, that things are broken, that systems are unfair, that some people don't eat, that some people don't have access to clean water, that sometimes voting systems are rigged. And you have to look at them and say, let's repair what can be broken, or let's repair what is broken. And that requires mental effort and energy and plans and thought and reason and a weighing of options. So which is it? And I'm saying, yes, it's something like yes, that both of these things I think are possible. So maybe it's sort of like we need to sit in meditation or some version thereof, and see the flow of illusions and desires passing through our minds, which causes suffering, to feel and know that we're impermanent, that even our thought is nothing but a vaporous illusion, and that so much of our suffering comes from desires that aren't real, and that nature is what we are, and what we're in. And we need to get up and fix the dishwasher. That's what we need to do. You know, enough is enough. Do you know that for 3 years, I have a riding lawnmower, I drove around a dead maple tree. It was very small. It was, very small. It had died, and I thought, one of these days I'm gonna take care of this. Instead, I just mowed around it. For 3 years, just mowed around it. And then one day, I was passing by on the mower, I was like, I wonder how, I was still just riding. I didn't even slow down. And I pulled on the tree and it just came up like 3 years. I just mowed around something. And every time I mowed around, I'd be annoyed. I'm like, I hate mowing around this thing. And it wasn't even in the ground. You know, it just was like a strong wind would have blown it over if it had any leaves. So yeah, I do need to accept the way things are and be in the flow. And also I need to fix the dishwasher and pull up the dead trees and be concerned about global bioregions, however we can do that, knowing we're going to be swallowed by the forest. So that's about all I've got for you today. Thanks for listening.